Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Duplantis batting .310 here in the postseason. Trying to get on base here to get things started. First pitch. Hit high and deep to right field, but this one's going to curve foul. Right of the Nissan foul pole. No, they're going to say it caught inside for a round tripper. Oh, Florida State immediately saying, let's review that. The first base umpire, David Yule, said it's a home run, and Duplantis makes his way around the bases to get the Tigers on the board to make it 3-1 for his 12th home run of the year.
Good morning and welcome. It's RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. It's a beautiful Monday, June the 10th. We appreciate you making us part of your day. We're broadcasting live here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in HD. You want to give us a call today? By all means, do so. ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We had a tremendous show lined up for you today. Third hour, we will have our good friend Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network helping us break down LSU baseball. Season comes to a close. We'll also have Teddy Allen from designatedwriters.com, the Shreveport Times. Also, the master of ceremonies for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. He'll help us recap the weekend that was in Natchitoches. Second hour, we got Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, joining us, giving us all the updates on LSU football, recruiting, camps, hoops, and much, much more. And to lead off the second hour, we'll have my interview with the former LSU head coach, national champion, and a man who was enshrined on Saturday into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, the one and only Les Miles. And yes, Cody, I did ask him about his Dr. Pepper commercial.
I've yet to see the file of this interview, so until I see the file of this interview, I won't believe it.
Don't believe it. But we'll have to start off. We'll also touch on NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup as well. But we'll start off with LSU baseball. And I have a very simple question to ask all the LSU fans out there that are listening right now. Do you feel that this season was a disappointment with the preseason expectations, but with everything that this team had to overcome, including the plague of arm soreness that affected nearly every pitcher on staff? They had an up-and-down season, but the pitching staff was just decimated with injuries, and particularly that arm soreness, all year. The only one that did not have to deal with an injury, I want to say, was Zacchaeus. That's the only one. So, yes, you're not going to Omaha because Florida State took the first two games of the Super Regionals to sweep the Super Regionals away from you, did so in walk-off fashion in extra innings last night. But is the season overall a disappointment with everything that occurred, with everything that this team had to overcome? And I'll start with you, Mr. Schutz. diehard LSU fan, a man who I know was in Alex Box Stadium over the weekend.
I was there Saturday.
You were there Saturday for the Super Regional. I know you bleed purple and gold. Everything that you know that's going on with this team, everything that's occurred with this team, specifically the injury bug, can you be objective enough to say that this was, in fact, not a disappointment of a season? Or do you feel that it is?
It's a weird question or a weird answer because, yes, overall the season is a bit of a disappointment when you look at where things started and the projections necessarily of this team. But once you got over that initial disappointment of the season, when you realized that this team wasn't necessarily going to compete for a regular season SEC title, or you saw that, okay, now, or especially let's say when they didn't get one of those first four seeds in the SEC tournament, so they had to play in that initial game, and there was that disappointment of, are they even going to host a regional? So when you got, once you get over those initial disappointments of the season, aware of going, you know, preseason number one to, are they going to be able to host a regional? Is that going to be a thing? Once you put those behind you and say, okay, that all happened, and then you take the season from that point on, basically, you know, maybe, I hate to say that, Arkansas series on, but maybe the SEC tournament.
That's proved to be a bit of a turning point right there when they avoided the sweep.
So maybe if you go from that point on, and now I would say that, no, that this part of the season, I'm not necessarily disappointed in this team right now, but that's probably got a little bit to do with I was very disappointed in this team about a month and a half ago. So it's one of those, it's a weird thing. Like, I was disappointed with this entire season, but thinking that, okay, well, there goes this, you know, what are they going to be able to do? And to get to a Super Regional and then luckily host that Super Regional, you know, that portion of the season, I don't feel too sad about. So it's a weird feeling. It's, you know, projected number one preseason, yeah, you want to at least make it to the final eight. You didn't do that.
You fell just short.
But as bad or as rough as things were going for this team at one point in the season, now you look at where they ended and it's, and they showed a little grit to get to where they were. So
you kind of have to look at it in phases, right?
That's kind of what I'm saying. So it's tough. There are some portions of the season that are very disappointing. This, for me, particularly this regional into super regional run, it sucks. But it's not disappointing. I mean, it's like I was mentioning to you right before we went on the air, Ray, last night. We can get into this because I have thoughts. But, you know, Zach Hess was, I mean, bawling his eyes out at the end of the game. That's for a different reason. Devin Fontenot, you saw, also crying after the game. Very, very upset. And his teammates having to, you know, help him off the field, so to speak, and things. And my thoughts on that for Fontenot is that, you know, yeah, you can be upset. You probably should be upset. You know, you gave up the walk-off hit. There's nobody, you're not going to catch me telling you, no, don't be sad about that. No, it happened. Be upset, but don't be ashamed. And I hope he didn't feel ashamed of him, because there's nothing for Devin Fontenot to be ashamed of that performance.
He pitched the best game of his career.
Probably of his life.
Yeah, right. And it's a shame that he had to be the one to lose, right?
Right. Upset, but don't be ashamed.
And we talked about it before we went on the air, a terrific moment that the Florida State head coach, longtime head coach Mike Martin, actually requested to talk to Devin Fontenot before media. No one was in the room. And Michael Bonnet, the SID there at LSU, sent out a little photo about it. And Mike Martin just wanted to tell Devin Fontenot how amazing a pitching performance it was. And that's a classy move to do. But that just goes to show you that even the opposition thought, wow, that was a performance for the ages. And obviously you're right, Cody. You want Devin to be upset because he's a competitor and that's what you want to see from him, right? That's what you want
to
see.
What I mean, you can't ask him to not be upset at all. You know, some people, you know, you hear, and it comes a lot from my mom. My mom would always tell me this after games or something would go wrong. Like, you know, don't be upset. You played hard. You tried your best. Don't be upset. Like, no, that's not, no, I'm going to be upset. Do I feel ashamed for what I did? Do I feel like I let everybody down? Maybe I don't feel like I let the whole team down or I let the fan base down. But, you know, be upset about what happened, because in your mind, you know, Devin Fondo's mind, I bet you he still thinks he's the best pitcher in the world. And it's a little upsetting that he doesn't.
And he's not going to look at it right now, Cody. He's not going to look at the fact that he pitched six innings of no-hit baseball.
Well, that also has to do, I think, with something about Coach Maneri. He probably tried to take him out a couple of times, and he fought his way to stay in, and he stayed in. So also in the back of his mind, now he has to think that, oh, man, should I have listened to Coach? Should I have not gone back? So that's probably got something else to do with it, because there are a lot of initial thoughts. Because I've never been in that situation before where I've lost something as crucial or given up the game-winning hit for something as crucial. But I've been part of games before where my team came up on the losing end and I felt like it had a large chunk or a large percentage to do with me or an action that I took during the game that didn't go well for my team. So, you know, I can empathize with the kid, and it sucks. It sucks.
The wild pitch put the winning run in scoring position.
That's BS, by the way. That's a pass ball.
That was a pass ball.
That's bad. That's just bad scoring by whoever the official. That's bad scoring. That's a pass ball.
But then Fondo had picked up his 11th strikeout of the game, and that hit that he gave into the single into right field, that was a 2-2 pitch.
And also, you have to question why there wasn't an intentional walk to their best hitter. Their runner on second base, tie game, bottom of an extra inning, first base is open. Why don't you put their best hitter on first and throw the next guy? I don't know. I'm not the head coach. That's just a question.
Your pitcher's throwing a no-hitter, though.
Well, he just gave up a hit, didn't he? And the guy before him was that
no
game winner, the first hit. He walked that guy in front of him.
He pitched six innings before allowing the one out the one out single in the 12th.
They must have walked him in that pitch. I mean, I don't know. I think you got to put him on. That guy's batting like 360 something with 16 RBIs. I think you got now, and especially with the way the rules are now, Fontenot didn't have to throw four balls. You just put up the four and you walk him. I just don't know. I'm second guessing now.
It's tough. At the time, it's tough it wasn't in the extra innings too,
yeah,
right?
Because at the time, tough. I wasn't necessarily saying walk him. At the time, no. I was like strike his blow. You know what?
Right.
So I get it. It's just I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm second guessing things, but it's kind of my job.
Let's throw it up on the Twitter with our today's poll question on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. And let's do that, and let's give them three answers, Cody. Let's say, you know, are you not disappointed at all, slightly disappointed, or majorly disappointed? That can be the three options of this LSU baseball season. We want you to be honest. Let us know. You can also give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline. We'll make time for you. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got to hit a break. When we come back here, more LSU baseball talk right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. You want to give us a call? Talk a little LSU baseball? Pick up the phone. Dial the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Talking LSU baseball. Being eliminated in the Super Regional, swept by Florida State. Visiting Florida State, Seminoles punched their ticket to the College World Series. LSU wasn't the only home team that got upset. As we know, UCLA, the top number one overall seed in the whole shebang, is not headed to Omaha, Michigan. The Wolverines, who were one of the last four in, they got in. They upset the Bruins to punch their ticket to the College World Series. Rest of the Super Regionals will be wrapped up today. And we'll see who else is going to get to be able to go to Omaha. We head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on someone we know quite well on this show. It's the one and only, the man from STM, the Cougar himself, Coach Danny Broussard. Coach, how you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning, Raymond and Cody. How you guys doing today?
We're doing well, man. We're doing well.
Great. Well, I want two things I want to talk about. One, Raymond, did you get to go to the game? Were you at the game?
I unfortunately was not able to go to the games. I was in Natchitoches for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this past weekend. But Cody went Saturday.
Okay, well, that's the second thing I wanted to talk to you about. But anyway, I'd be curious to see why would Maneri pitch to that to their best player? I mean, you know, to me, you always try to, I mean, make somebody else beat you, right? Why would you pitch to their best player? And the situation was you got a runner on second, right? So that runner doesn't matter at all. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So you put him on first, and then not that the next guy might hit a home run, but I think you take away their best player. I think, and I'm curious to see if Maneri, maybe he had a chart that said this next guy hit better with runners in scoring position. I don't know, but I would never have thrown to their best pitcher. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, their best hitter. What's your thoughts on that?
It's tough, right, Coach? Because your instinct is to say, "Hey, let's avoid this guy," but then you have your pitcher out there that's had a hell of a night and did have a no hitter going through, and maybe you think he can get you out of that jam and he can go and attack. You got your best pitcher on the mound for that situation. You let him attack their best player. You know, it's tough because Devin pitched the game of his life, you know, pretty much up to that point.
He was unbelievable.
He's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
But you're right. The guy from Florida State is a phenomenal ball player. So, you put him on, it doesn't matter because the winning run's already at second base to begin with.
Second base, yeah.
Right.
I would have never pitched him, but I'm not the baseball coach. So that was just my 2 cents. But hey, how about Raymond? I didn't know that you were that close to Philip Timothy, man. What an awesome honor for that guy. What an awesome guy he is.
Yes, he's one of my favorite people in the world, Coach. He was a mentor to me, helped me develop me in my career. Yeah. So I call him a dear friend and a mentor, and he's one of the best people in the business. So I was thrilled to be able to see him share the stage this past weekend with the likes of Peyton Manning and Les Miles.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So I like I said, as I was reading through stuff and watching your Twitter stuff, I was like, man, I didn't realize that you were that close to him. He's a really good guy. You know, when I first started coaching, he was with Kevin Foote at the Habitat, you know, and I got to meet him a little bit as well there too, and just a really good down to earth human being, and my hat's off to him. As a matter of fact, I just got his list. So I just woke him up right now. Thank you so much. I'll find out if he's sleeping or not. I'm gonna give him a call. But anyway, just wanted to ask those 2 cents. You guys have a good week.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate the call. Starting off our week on the right foot, we got a phone call from Coach Danny Broussard.
That means we're I don't know what that means. Yeah, it means something. But
that means we're going to have a good week.
Only time will tell.
That's what that means. We're having a good week, Coach Broussard.
But he seems to be echoing my thoughts.
It is a fair question.
I'm not the baseball coach. I don't know. And like Coach said, maybe there's something Maneri was looking at or something AD was seeing that, hey, let's go after this guy or something. I don't know, but I'm with you, Coach. I think we're on the same wavelength here as I wouldn't have thrown to him. But, again, you had just struck out the guy that hit an 875-foot home run on Saturday. I didn't see that ball off the bat. I'm not even trying to joke. When he hit that ball, I didn't know where it went. I didn't know. When he hit it, it was, you know what told me the ball went over the wall? When old boy hit it, Reese Albert, I believe, is the guy. When he hit it, he didn't move. He didn't like pimp it. There was no bat flip or anything. I think he surprised himself. He hit it and he stood at home plate and just watched it. And I was looking for the ball. I'm literally looking in left field. This ball goes over the Intimidator and the Marucci building. I don't know if it stayed in the park, not just like the fence and the crowd. Like, I think it may have like hit the railroad tracks. You're laughing, dude. Have you seen the home run?
I did.
Oh my God. I mean, farthest baseball I've seen hit since Brian Moore, first baseman during the Gorilla Ball era for LSU. I saw him hit a home run once at Alec Box over the American flag in center field.
No.
I kid you not. This was during the Gorilla Ball era, and this is a big old fat beefy boy played first base, Brian Moore for LSU, and I watched him hit a ball over the American flag. And I was like, this right here is why we watch LSU baseball. Now, that'll never happen again, but this Reese Albert kid sure tried to do his best impression of that.
It was still a heck of a weekend. Saturday's game was weird. And let's have an honest conversation real quick. We can talk about leaving Devin Fondo in, Cody. What did you think of the starting pitching over the weekend?
Well, there's only really one game you can ask about, and that was yesterday's game, because Saturday's game doesn't count. Cole Henry got hurt. Or we assume he got hurt. I don't know why else he would come out in the second inning.
He threw 41 pitches in two innings.
He hadn't gotten hurt. That's the only thing. There's a little
arm
tightness.
That's what they said. That he probably got a little arm tightness, I think.
I mean, Todd Peterson, clumsy as hell, but did a great job.
Peterson came in, did it clumsy as hell, did not display his coordination very well.
No.
He had that Raymond Parts coordination there, fielding that ball. But yet my man still adjusted his hat before he fell down, so bravo to that. We'll keep the LSU baseball discussion moving forward. We're going to talk a little about one of our own, Lafayette High's own, Antoine Duplantis. A tremendous career comes to an end. We'll talk more about that coming up right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Reminder, top of hour number two at around 7:03. My interview with the man who was inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this past weekend, former national championship coach of LSU, Les Miles, will be coming up to start the second hour. But before we get to Hall of Fame talk and football talk, let's keep it rolling here with the LSU baseball team. Twitter poll question is up right now on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. What's your level of disappointment? Not disappointed, slightly disappointed, or massively disappointed about LSU season? And once again, just not how the Super Regional ended, but the whole season from start to finish. Preseason expectations being ranked number one, number two in the nation. The plague of arm soreness, injuries. The run at the end of the season. And now the loss in the Super Regionals. Couple takeaways for me, Cody. A couple things that stood out about this past weekend that just kind of were a bad omen from jump. One thing that stood out, they were banking on Cole Henry and Landon Marceau to carry them into Omaha. And when Henry gets hurt, he threw 41 pitches. I'm watching the game in Natchitoches. And they're like, oh, they pulled him. I was like, what? We looked up. We didn't even know. Like, we know he struggled there in the second inning. He looked good in the first. He struggled in the second. He got all the way up to 41 pitches, and he didn't come back out for the third. And we're like, what? We're like, that's bad. This is the Super Regionals. There's no room for error when that happens, and that proved to be a bad omen for me. That, and what the hell were the Tigers doing on the base paths this weekend? Base running was terrible. Cole Henry not being able to go deep into Saturday's game, and base running on Sunday. We can talk about Devin Fondo giving up that hit and facing Florida State's best batter, but if Cole Henry doesn't get hurt and goes deeper into Saturday's game, what happens Sunday doesn't really matter. And if they actually run the base paths properly, then that game may not even go to extras, right? That's what you have to look at. LSU did not play its best series. I mean, I think that can be Henry gets hurt. Bullpen gives up some runs. Fielding miscues, especially on Saturday. Base running miscues on Sunday. Just wasn't one thing that lost the Tigers this series, the Super Regionals, to the Florida State Seminoles. And I don't think it was nerves. I don't think it was anything like that. I really don't. I just think it was baseball. I mean, it look, me and Cody were talking about this during the break. The super slow-mo replay showed Zach Watson was safe, right? But Cody, you and I were talking about it. Why did he even do that to begin with?
You know, you like the aggressive play.
I do.
In general. In that situation, though, you also have to wonder what Jared Foster is saying, coaching first base. Is he in Watson's ear, take two, take two, take two? Is he yelling back, back, back? Is he sitting there with his hands in his pockets and letting Watson be the baseball player that he is and decide? That we'll probably never know. But I 100% agree with, and anybody else that was watching the game on TV will know exactly what I'm talking about. I 100% subscribe to the thought that Eduardo Perez had saying that regardless if you slide in there safe or not, and all three of the guys, Kyle Peterson, I believe it was Tom Hart, and Eduardo Perez, all thought Zach Watson was safe. They come and they call him out, and that's kind of weird. One of those undisputable evidence. They didn't have it, I guess, or whatever. I don't know, kind of weird. They call him out. Eduardo Perez's thought is, it doesn't matter if the super slow-mo shows you're safe or not. You can't do that. You have to keep the inning going. It's just a rally killer. I mean, yeah, granted, I guess the double play is still set up, but I'd rather see Zach Watson try to steal second than try to take it on something like that. You could have had a runner at third base with less than two outs. That runner's Antoine Duplantis, so he's super fast. My biggest question is, before I just start throwing blame around, is a question I'll never get the answer to. What did Jared Foster do as the first base coach? That's my thought. Did he tell him? And we'll never know. We'll never know.
It's fair.
But you can't do it. You can't get thrown out there.
No, you can't get thrown out there. And go back to Saturday. LSU had a 4-0, 4-0 lead.
Yeah, they scored one run in four innings in a row. It was just like Florida State couldn't seem to get them up and down in order. It was a few base hits here, run scored. A few base hits there, run scored. And then it just...
So even with Henry being pulled after two, after throwing 41 pitches, and we assume having some type of arm soreness or arm inflammation that prevented him from pitching the remainder of the way, LSU was still leading that game, Cody, 4-0. It ended up losing 6-4.
On an 875-foot home run.
It had space shuttle velocity.
It was I didn't see it. I didn't see it.
Yeah, and that was 11 pitches. That was talking about the Reese Albert. Yeah,
where he fouled off a three. Was it a 3-2 count maybe or 2-2 count? He fouled off a million pitches.
For the three-run homer.
And then just,
it was 11 pitches.
Whopped it. And then LSU on Saturday, they tried.
And that tied the game. That tied the game. The three-run blast tied the game in the seventh inning. But you're at home in the Supers. You have a 4-0 lead at one point in that game.
You were throwing a no-hitter going into the sixth inning.
And the wheels fell off. And I just...
Let's not forget Albert hit another home run.
Yeah. Yes.
Off of Zach Hess, though, so not as impressive as his first home run.
Yeah. You had an opportunity, even with Henry not pitching well. You had the opportunity to win that game. And you let it get away from you. And with Henry not going the distance, you still found a way to get a win. I mean, you still found a way to win the game. You were winning the game by four runs, and you end up losing it. Some fielding miscues there on Saturday, and then the bullpen just let you down.
Well, that home run, I believe, put them ahead, Florida State did in that Saturday game, because Albert hit a game-tying home run. And then I believe he hit the go-ahead home run a few innings later.
Yeah, the three-run blast was the game tire that tied it at 4-4.
And then he hit the second home run of that game to put him ahead by one. And then the Tigers, I believe there were runners on the corners, maybe, or something like that, with one out, and they threw a ball into the outfield. And then at that point, it was 6-4. And there was a bit of a rally for LSU in that they had AD up, Antoine Duplantis up, with a chance to, you know, it maybe tie it up or something there in the last inning, and he popped up to the catcher. It's tough.
They had their opportunities on Saturday. They had their opportunities on Saturday. They let that game get away from them. They automatically put themselves in a hole by losing the first game. And then game two comes, and they lose that one in heartbreaking fashion. A punch to the gut, by all means. And we talked about, you know, should have Maneri put in Zach Hess? Did Fondo pitch too long Sunday night? Well, Hess gave up a homer, too, on Saturday. It's easy to second guess, though, right? It just is. It is easy to second guess. But the base running was an issue. The bullpen was an issue. And they had some fielding errors as well. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Doug to the show. Doug, good morning to you, brother. What you got for us?
Good morning, bro. Hey, man, how about getting thrown out at third?
Oh.
How about that play?
Oh, that was...
That was about the biggest bonehead thing. Oh, my God. And whose fault was that, right? I mean, was that the coach's? Was the coach egging him on? Or was just the base run? Who was it, Giacomo, or was it Smith? I can't remember.
It was Jamal. You know, we really didn't get an explanation about that, I don't think, afterwards. Or Maneri's not going to throw his third base coach under the bus. But
right.
Yeah, but once again, the base running, right? That's an opportunity where you don't have to be there, and you could have had someone else come up, and part of me is always torn about that, Doug, because you love the aggressive nature, right? You love the
right.
the pitcher that right. gets after the batter, attacks the batter like Zach Hess always does or Fondo did. You attack the batter. Well, then you give up the big hit. You play with fire like that. I love the aggressiveness on the base pass, but it just seemed like the weekend in general for them against Florida State is that aggressiveness bit them in the behind, whether it was on the base pass or at the plate or in the bullpen or attacking a batter. It just seemed like that aggressiveness just came back and bite them over and over again this weekend against Florida State.
Yeah, it sure did. And another thing, Maneri should look at his training staff this offseason. He should take a look at from top to bottom. I mean, this arm-itis thing that they've been plagued with all season, what is it? Is it just arm soreness, or they're not treating these boys right after they pitch? I mean, you're going to have a sore arm. You're a pitcher. But, I mean, come on, man. I mean, are they really injured, or just arm soreness? I mean,
it is
evaluate that.
Doug, I appreciate the phone call, and I agree with you in that regard. It is something that has plagued this team. And look, this is something that we're starting to see a lot more in college baseball in general, is this arm soreness thing. Now, it used to be back in the day they were just injured and they were on the shelf. But, I mean, what, Cole Henry missed a month? And it was just due to arm soreness. Like, the inflammation in their arms, are these guys being pitched too much during travel ball growing up? By the time they get to college, they can't handle the workload anymore? Is that part of the issue? Or is it something like you said with the training staff? I think that's a fair question to be asked. Now they're building the new training facility right there for the baseball program. But I agree with you. There's some questions that have to be asked and some looking in the mirror about the training. Also about the pitching style and the pitching coaching of Dunn, because here's the other thing.
Right.
You don't have a lefty. Like, how does that happen? How do you not have a left-handed pitcher on staff? And he's talked about it at Media Day. I remember Maneri as clear as day going, well, it just kind of worked out that way, that the guys that we were able to sign that came to LSU just all happened to be righties. How do you not have a left-handed pitcher? How many times this year would a lefty would have helped?
You're right about that.
So I think you're going to see there has to be something done with the left-handed pitcher. and then maybe Armstrong. But, Doug, I appreciate the phone call, brother. I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Ray.
Let me just, because we have to go to break, but thank you, Doug, for that call, because maybe I just blocked it from my mind, but that was a huge base-running blunder. Another situation, less than two outs, a guy on third base that you give yourself up there. Yes, Raymond, everything you were saying about you love the aggressive nature, you want to get out there, that all is exactly true. I will not argue that. That applies to the Zach Watson play. The aggressive nature and loving it and going, you know what? Oh, man, you just can't do that, but good try way to be aggressive. That does not, in my humble opinion, apply to the Giovanni DiGiacomo pickoff play. You're an idiot.
Brutal.
What? There's nowhere. Where are you going?
That was.
There's no aggressiveness to be had. It wasn't even, if you go look at the play, I'm sure you can find it on Twitter. It wasn't even a huge secondary lead. No. You would think in your mind, because the pitcher's going through the windup, as soon as the windup starts, that's when Giovanni's moving down the line, and that's how he ends up too far down the line. No, go watch the play. The pitcher is halfway through his delivery before DiGiacomo starts creeping towards home plate. He's not that far off the base. What it was is a called play, whether it was called by the catcher, the third baseman, or somebody in the dugout for the Seminoles. That was a designed, called play. Giovanni was not that far off the base. He was just not paying enough attention.
I hate to say it, but when that happened, I was like, that's ball game. Like, I just, you had so many little things happen over the weekend, and that the Tigers were on the wrong end of it, mental mistakes, and things didn't go their way. And when that happened, I turned to my wife, I go, that's going to be, and she's like, well, the game's not, I said, that's just one of those ones that it's hard to dust yourself off from when you go, you were that close. You had that opportunity. You could have seized, and you're like, oh. And it wasn't done like the Watson, where it was like kind of a bang-bang play, and you're like, well, right? That play was just like, oh, bro, what'd you do? And of course, the kid's a freshman,
and
right?
That's what I was going to bring. Before we wrapped it all up, I was going to say that you can only hope that this is a learning moment for him and it doesn't tear him down. But yet,
he's a coach's son, so it's not going
to build himself back up.
He's a coach's son, we know that, so it's not going
to
tear
him down. You'll never see that mistake again, and he's comfortable with his speed on the field. He knows he's fast. He just got, sometimes it's technique. Alex Bregman, not the fastest guy on the field, but he knows how to steal a base.
Correct.
Giovanni DiGiacomo, fastest guy on the field, just needs you to learn how to run the bases a little more.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably would have thrown me out too, but.
Right.
I didn't get a full ride scholarship to LSU.
They wouldn't have thrown
me
out.
Not a full ride.
I have massive speed for such a big fella. Let me tell you, I'm a beast on the base pass.
Agile like a hippo.
Very much so. Hippo rolling down a hill. When we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber. That's 133 and 1133 in HD. We got some activity on the ARCO Equipment Hotline this morning, as expected. A couple calls already in the bank. But if you want to, you can give us a call, 337-706-0111. I do want to, you know, we're dissecting how LSU loses to Florida State. Their season has come to an end short of making a return trip to Omaha for the first time since 2017 for the College World Series. But can we take a moment to talk about Antoine Duplantis? LSU's all-time hits leader. He was phenomenal yesterday. He tried to keep the Tigers afloat by going 4 of 6 with a solo home run and 3 RBIs, the former Lafayette High Mighty Lions star. He finished his career with 359 hits and 1,109 at-bats, only 5 at-bats shy of the NCAA record for most at-bats in a career. Tremendous career for Antoine Duplantis. He had to be consoled multiple times afterwards. That tells you how much he loves being a Tiger. Tremendous career for Twani. Unfortunately, it comes to an end, but he'll get an opportunity to play at the next level.
Real quick, one-word answer from you. His home run, fair or foul?
That was fair.
I think it's fair, too. I think it somehow snuck behind the pole. During the break, we had Tim call in. Tim, his biggest
shout
point.
Shout out, Tim.
Yeah, shout out to Tim. His biggest point was that Florida State pitcher, Van Sy, or I can't remember his last name, that started the game, Tim noticed that he was pounding the strike zone early. Seemed like he got ahead on every player. And Tim said he would have liked to have seen the players get a little aggressive at the plate. You saw him playing hard everywhere else, but they seem to be taking a lot of those first pitch strikes. And he says, man, that's a bummer. Had a lot to do with maybe the struggles at the plate.
Yeah, he set the tone. He was like, I'm coming right at you, right? And they couldn't do really anything about it, so that kind of put them in a hole. That's a fair point by Tim.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. When we come back here, hour one's done. Hour two, we're going to lead off with the Mad Hatter, my interview with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Les Miles.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer, Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Good morning to you. It's 7:03, and you're listening to Acadiana's sports station. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. High definition. Got to talk to a Hall of Famer. Talk to a bunch of them. When I went up to Natchitoches for the weekend, went to the press conference on Thursday, stuck around for all the events for the weekend. We broadcast the show on Friday morning live from downtown Natchitoches. But I was able to lock up an interview with the Mad Hatter. That's right. Les Miles. God, I miss that man. I do. Just talking to him. And then he had himself a hell of a Q&A session on the stage during Saturday's ceremony. It was pretty tremendous. He kept talking smack to Philip Fulmer, who was in the audience for Peyton Manning. It was tremendous. And he told a great story about his daughter talking smack to someone else, smacker herself. But was able to catch up with the former national championship winning coach, talked about a litany of things. Here is my interview with Les Miles.
Coach, I know you expressed how appreciative you are about being inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame when you found out late last year during the fall. But what is it like now being here in Natchitoches and you're going to be taking the stage tomorrow and being enshrined as one of the greats in Louisiana history?
Well, it's certainly it's an honor, and I'm extremely humbled. But I'm really here to thank and those men that played great did all the things we asked them to do, and Will Tarr with a smile on their face, the assistant coaches that did everything they could to have great game plans, and I'm really just here to say I did, but I represented a larger number of men than me, and they did great, and I'm proud of them, and I'm glad to be a part of the Sports Hall of Fame, and I'm glad to have been the head coach at LSU.
You come into a situation where you're taking over a program that won a national championship a couple years prior. You know, a lot of expectations. You know the LSU fandom is immense. They love that purple and gold. But you came in, you had success right off the bat. You win a national championship in year three. You know, when you took that job, did you think, yeah, we're going to be able to win a national championship in 3 years and we're going to compete for other ones? Did you think that as soon as you took the job all those years ago?
I always thought that we were going to win. It's the one failing that I have on the issue, certainly. I've never taken the field where I didn't feel like the team that I was with didn't have a great chance to have victory. And for that matter, deserve with their effort and energy in practice week to have victory. So, yeah, that's never been an issue with me. I always enjoyed taking the field with the Tigers because 82.5, and now over 100, about 103,000 people knew that. And it's the reason that they gathered in the stadium is to watch the Tigers whoop somebody's behind.
We're talking with soon-to-be enshrined Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Les Miles, former LSU head football coach, national champion. Coach, let's talk about the first time you stepped onto the field inside Tiger Stadium, and that electricity is something, especially at nighttime, is something that it's hard to describe to people that haven't experienced it. What was it like for you when you were there inside Tiger Stadium that first time?
Well first, we go through a lengthy preparation for game week. Game week, we fasten it down. We make sure we're ready. And at that point in time, and we really haven't taken the field in the stadium. And when you take the field in Tiger Stadium, you go through what is a double bottom goalpost. Instead of one piece and you have to go around, you get to go right straight through. And you touch the wind bar and you open the door. And generally speaking, there's some ESPN guy who's saying, not now, not now, not now. And you have a football team behind you who's saying, right now, right now, right now, right now. And onto the field you go. The length and loudness of the cheer from the crowd is enough to bring, you know, goosebumps to the back of your neck. And you smile because you've done everything that you can to that point to be perfect. And now we're going to play games. Now we're going to have plays. And then now your job then starts. So when I took the field, I was ecstatic that crowd was just happy as they could be with these Tigers.
One of your former Tigers I have on, a guest on my show quite a bit, Marlon Favorite. And I talked to him on my show the other day, and he spoke so highly of you. And I said, you know, you were recruited by Coach Saban. He's known as this demonstrative, you know, get after you, you know, just going to work you to death. And then, you know, Coach Miles, he's a player's coach. He's a tough-nosed guy, you know, former, you know, lineman, but he's a tough-nosed guy. And Coach and Marlon said this, Coach, he's like, the coach worked us. The practice we had under Coach Miles was some of the toughest I've ever had in my entire life. You think people are how much satisfaction do you get from that when someone like that who went on to play in the NFL still remembers and respects you for the kind of the preparation?
Yeah, I think there's a number of guys, Marlon Favorite, you know, would recognize that he worked hard. You know, I think that there's a comfort with our preparation when a player like Marlon Favorite can look back and go, we're ready. I mean, we practiced our butt off this week. We're ready to take the field. I enjoy that. And it's right and it's true. I wanted to make sure that the situations that I had to prepare for were prepared for.
He also shared a story about the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame, and that displayed his rap skills, and you apparently displayed some of your dance moves during that, and even knew some of the lyrics of the song. Can you reflect back on that for us, there,
yeah,
Coach?
I've always enjoyed a little bit of rap and what is current music from the guys that I coach. And occasionally I can let my hair down and laugh and be a part.
Let's talk a little about, you know, having fun. You know, before you took the Kansas job, you're out there, entertainment. The Dr. Pepper campaign during the national championship earned rave reviews. People loved it. I got to ask you, where'd you come up with that laugh there at the end? And how much fun was that for you just to be able to, you know, kind of just,
you know,
play make-believe, so
talking,
to speak?
I was just talking with Peyton Manning, and I said, you know what, I really enjoyed commercials and trying to act and trying to display a story. And I don't mind if I'm made to look naive or a little, you know, left of center in something along those lines, because it's part of the story that's being told. So I had a blast, and I apologize still to anybody that had to watch the Super Bowl or the national championship game with seeing me, you know, in some role. So it was fun.
We'll wrap it up with this, Coach. Obviously, you're about to enter your first season there with the Jayhawks. You've taken over a program. There seems to be a lot of buzz building about, a lot of excitement. Just how excited are you to be back out there this fall on the sidelines once again, coaching young men?
It's always been a joy for me to take the field with a team. And I look to the right, and I can remember, you know, the offensive line lined up right to my right. And I look to the left, and I remember Glenn Dorsey, the defensive line, lined right to my left. And when we took the field, as a unit, as a team, that we weren't going to let anything in the perimeter distract us from playing great championship football. I think that pursuit of practice is being fulfilled now. I think it's the one thing that I wanted to get that I couldn't get in acting or theater or whatever I did that was not football. Football has a special lure to me, maybe because of the guys that coached me, Bo Schembechler, Bill McCartney was a mentor. Maybe it's those guys. I like being on a practice field and making the team better.
Coach, appreciate you making the time out for us. Congratulations once again.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
That was my interview with the Mad Hatter from the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. That interview took place on the ground floor of the museum.
This place is getting lit.
That place.
I got my icy on. I know you got your icy on.
Got my icy on. Les has a good time. I miss him. I miss the press conferences. I miss talking about Columbus Day and not having really any real thought of what Columbus Day actually is. The grass, which
Columbus,
of course,
sailed the ocean blue in 1492.
The grass eating, you know, which of course they brought that up, and he just, you know, he went right with it. But they did ask him during the ceremony on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
They wrapped it up. Lynn Rollins, friend of the station,
Hall of Famer
himself. So he asked Les, you know, he asked him with one question, because it was so funny because Lynn started asking questions and he realized that the interview, the Q&A had come off the rails because Les just took it in a whole nother direction.
Duh. Yeah, he saw that coming.
He just sets his notes down. And I was like, oh, there it is. But he is able to get Les back on track, and he asked him about who, you know, because he was at Oklahoma State and he beat Oklahoma for the first time in a generation as the head coach at Oklahoma State.
Right.
And he's back in the Big 12, but he was also at LSU. So what's a bigger deal? What's more important, beating Oklahoma or beating Alabama? So Les played with the crowd, and he asked, I need to hear from the people. And, of course, you know, beating Alabama got a big thing, and, like, no one barely said anything about beating Oklahoma. And he says, well, you know, that's what I expected. But then he said, you know, the whole thing is I want my guys, I want my team to feel like they can go out there and beat the best. You know, he gave that great Les Miles,
right,
the hats
right
on too tight
go
speech.
Have a victory today.
You know, he's like, yeah. And then he said, I want Alabama. Like, you know, so I love
the clap. Did you do the
Lynn Rollins actually got him to demonstrate how to do the Les Miles clap to the audience.
I love Lynn Rollins. He's asking the questions that we all want to know.
And Les did. He said, this is what you got to do.
Yeah. Open the fingers.
Oh, got to open the fingers.
Yeah.
You got to do that. And then he can't, and while he's doing the clap, he made fun of Tennessee again. He's like, oh, that's wrong when you beat Tennessee. Like that. He's giving Fulmer hell the whole time. I don't know why, because Fulmer was sitting up close with Peyton Manning and his family. He was just giving Fulmer hell, man.
He picked this one jabroni in the room, and he's like, this is my guy. Huh?
Just went after it.
I feel like we should go to break with T-Pain and Rick Rosé. You know.
That's it.
This is Les Miles in a nutshell right here.
I thought for sure when I asked him, you know, if he did do the dancing to Marlon Favreite rapping, that he'd be like, oh, no, that didn't. But he's just like, I could just see him doing that. Like, well, yeah, I'm going to listen to rap music because that's what my players listen to. And that's my way of connecting to them. And I'll dance stupid, but it doesn't matter. It's that Dabo Sweeney thing, right?
It's Sean Payton, too.
Sean Payton, too. It ain't a Nick Saban thing.
No.
No.
Nick Saban smashed the boombox.
You don't. You are not allowed to listen to music ever. You must be in a glass cage of emotion.
You win the national championship. Saban's over. You got 24 hours. You got 24 hours. 24, to get over it.
Like four. It's more like four. But Les, I miss him. I miss him. He was great for LSU. And congratulations to Coach for getting into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame.
Gone, but never forgotten.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, hello, NBA Finals preview. The series could be wrapped up tonight. That's right. Who had that? Who had the We Are the North on the verge of winning an NBA championship? Raise your hand. We'll talk about that when we get back right here on 103.7 The Game.
The clock ticks down the final few seconds as the Toronto Raptors have won Game 4 of the NBA Finals. They lead the Warriors 3-1, and the Toronto Raptors head home north of the border for Game 5 on Monday, a chance to win the championship in their own building, a chance to win the title in Canada for the first time in franchise history, for the first time in NBA history. 105-92.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. NBA Finals returns tonight. Game 5. And the Toronto Raptors hold a 3-1 lead over the two-time defending champs, who were trying to go for a three-peat, the first team to win three in a row since the Chicago Bulls did it for a second time under Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, back in the 90s. They had, this is the thing that you got to realize is they had Klay Thompson back for Game 4. He led the Warriors with 28 points, played 42 minutes. Steph Curry dropped in 27. Draymond Green nearly had a triple-double, 10, 12, and 9. But here's the problem. They still lost. 105-92. Game 3, Steph scores more than 40, and they still lost in double digits. We talked about it on last week's show. And Golden State raced out, had a 6-point lead after the first quarter in Game 4, and then it was pretty much game over after that. Toronto had that ridiculous third quarter where they outscored the Warriors 37-21. Leading the way back in Game 4. By the way, Kawhi Leonard, 36 points, 12 rebounds. And he had contributions. Ibaka played 22 minutes, scored 20 points. Kyle Lowry had an off game. He scored only 10 points in 37 minutes, but it didn't matter. Van Fleet got injured. He had to be stitched up. He got cut underneath his eye. I want to say lost a tooth, too. On a play where Sean Livingston was fouled, and Livingston was coming down after being fouled and just knocked into Van Fleet. But Gasol dropped in 9 points. Danny Green has not had a great NBA Finals, and yet here's Toronto up 3-1. And we talked about it last week. The difference is depth. Toronto has it in spades. They just do. They have the best player on the court. That helps. Kawhi Leonard is the best player on the court. If Toronto locks this up, because they only need to win one more game, and they got 3 games to do it, he'll win NBA Finals MVP for a second time. But the Raptors have the depth. They have the best player on the court, but in addition to that, they have other guys that contribute. Marc Gasol, 28 minutes, 9 points, 7 rebounds. Those numbers aren't earth-shattering, but it helps. Van Fleet, 29 minutes, 8 points. Ibaka, like I said, 20 points in 22 minutes. They have other guys stepping up for them. They have a wealth of depth, veteran experience on this team with Gasol and Ibaka and others. We talked about it beforehand. They were not going to be intimidated by facing the Golden State Warriors. And remember when the narrative was, well, the Warriors are going to be able to win without Kevin Durant. How's that working out? The guy's in the conversation of being the best player on the planet. I know Golden State won a world championship without Kevin Durant, played for another one. They lost that epic series against LeBron James. I get that. But they've had him in the mix the last two, and they were unbeatable the last two NBA finals. They are vulnerable without him on the court. And the biggest difference between this version of the Golden State Warriors with an injured Kevin Durant and injured Kevin Durant not playing is the fact that that Golden State team, the Splash Brothers team that won the first world championship in this run, they had a ton of depth. They had an actual healthy and effective Andrew Bogut back then. They had a lot of other guys, pieces that came off the bench. Iggy was still, well, 5 years ago, a far more younger, more athletic, more dominant player that can come off the bench and win the NBA Finals MVP for them. They do not have that depth. So when Klay gets banged up, they can't replace him, and they miss Durant. They do. They miss him. Steph Curry is a tremendous player. Klay Thompson is a tremendous player. Draymond Green, tremendous player. These guys are champions. These guys are all-stars. These guys are all NBA selections, without a doubt. But you don't get better by not having the best player on the planet on your team not playing. Sorry. They got away with it against Portland. But there's a big difference between the Portland Trailblazers and Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors. And the Raptors went into Oracle and won both games. So there's no home court advantage for Golden State. They don't have the depth. And whether or not Durant plays tonight or not, this reminds me, this is eerily similar of that first world championship between the Warriors and the Cavs when LeBron pushed that series to six games by himself. Because remember, Kyrie Irving did not play in that. He was injured, and so was Kevin Love. Now the shoe is on the other foot, so to speak. Can the Warriors stave off elimination? We'll find out. We'll talk more about that on tomorrow's show. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll welcome on our good friend Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. It's time now to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. He joins us every Monday. One of the best guys covering recruiting in the state of Louisiana. A hell of a writer, too. From TigerDetails.com, it's our good friend Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man, I'm doing very well. Appreciate that that kind intro, making it a little bit even better of a Monday morning. And that's saying something. It was a pretty good weekend other than what happened with the baseball team. Huge recruiting weekend. You and I were talking earlier this morning, went over to the Wade Sims fundraiser yesterday. I had a chance to go to a couple concerts down in New Orleans Saturday night that ended up phenomenal. So other than what happened in the box, coming into this week, with a lot of excitement both personally and as far as that LSU beat.
Let's get right to it, man. Let's talk about it. It was a big few days overall. Coach O, a master of the Twitter, was out there doing his favorite thing. Hold that tiger. He made an announcement on Thursday and on Sunday with a lot of visitors on campus this weekend, too. What can you give us about what Coach O was referring to when he said, hold that tiger, announced it twice over the past 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, Coach O was big on the tweeter machine or whatever he likes to call it when he's joking about how his players need to stay off of it. But that Hold That Tiger tweet has really grown over the years to carry a lot of weight to the point where as soon as O hits it, I have people in my family that I didn't even know were aware of what Twitter was texting me, who is it, what's going on? And you mentioned the Thursday. Yeah, the Thursday announcement, and then a Saturday, and then a couple yesterday morning as well. And the two that have been public thus far are actually on Thursday, a video that Jimmy Smith, obviously, myself, and Julie Bodwin that we used to work with at NOLA.com helped produce for Major Burns to announce his commitment to this 2020 class, a local guy who had an emotional announcement honoring his father who passed away last July, and his telling of that story and the impact of his dad's legacy on really, I mean, everything to that family right now, and certainly his college decision. I thought Major did a tremendous job of kind of pulling the curtain back a little bit and letting people know a little bit more of who he is, and I thought Julie did a great job handling that video. And from a football standpoint, I think a great get, a guy that's very passionate about where he is, you know, his home state, his family, and the opportunity to be a part of DBU. He kept coming back to how huge, just like you and I have talked several times before, how huge of a role Corey Raymond was. And, you know, if Corey's not there, I don't know if maybe anything goes differently, because obviously being close to home is important, but he just could not stop singing the praises of Corey Raymond as a guy that turns young defensive backs into NFL players. And just, I mean, a great kid, very determined competitor, long, quick type guy like Corey likes out there on the perimeter. And so I think a really nice get for the recruiting class. And then on Saturday, Jordan Tolles, you know, one of the best safeties in the country out of the Maryland area, out of the Baltimore, Maryland area, teammate of Demond Clowney, ends up committing. And you look at this guy, 6'3", 200, you know, up north of 200 pounds, just very, very skilled athlete, very athletic safety, a guy who can do a lot of different things. They look at the opportunity for him to play kind of a varied role in that Dave Aranda defense, similar to what you've seen. Maybe Jacoby Stevens do because of his size, but you know, I think people know a lot about what Brantel Pitt's doing, also moving with all of the defense and having the opportunity to help in coverage, but also get involved, getting to the backfield. And I think Jordan Tolles, the guy that they look at in that regard, is just an incredible athlete that has the ability to do a lot of different things. And so another really big get for that football team. And then Jordan also, you know, talented basketball player. The expectations will be across the street in the PMAC when he's not busy with football. And I think also just nice to add another guy from that D.C., Baltimore area. It makes you feel that much better about the Clowney commitment to have his high school teammate on board now. There have been some kind of questions about Rakeem Jarrett up from that area, and so you wonder if having another top prospect from that metro area helps just kind of solidify some of those things. And then, you know, a couple of Hold That Tiger announcements on Sunday, too. The names haven't really come out, but of the strong visitor weekend, you know, a lot of talk has come out that it looks like it is a couple of JUCO prospects, Ali Day and Marco Domio, that, again, they have not made any public announcements, but that's kind of the thinking, is that those are the last two. And it's been kind of interesting to see the O announcement come on Sunday morning, but still nothing really be said that can go public with regards to confirming that it's those two guys indeed, or those two guys taking to Twitter to confirm themselves.
I'm talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about, I want to get your thought process, so to speak, on taking two JUCO guys at this moment, and then also how full this class is already getting here in early June. Tackle, what you thought your process on the JUCO guys?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised because of how well things have been going with recruiting top four-year guys coast to coast. And we've talked so many Mondays about the success that LSU is having recruiting elite prospects from all over the country that would end up being on campus for 3 to 5 years. And so as they already creep up toward 20 commitments they went into the weekend with 16 after major, and then you add Jordan Tolles on Saturday, and so you're up to 17. So to start pushing up toward 20 and have a couple of JUCO guys when there's still a ton of high school guys, when you look at the last few spots, and we've talked about the need for some defensive linemen, and there's a lot of top high school defensive linemen in Louisiana that LSU is very involved with, and they continue to chase running backs really all over the country. Kendall Milton was a high school guy from California that was on campus this weekend that I know is a big priority for the staff right now. And so I was kind of interested. I wonder how much some things not working out, with a guy like Devin Cotton moving on, and some losses there have maybe pushed them to feel like they might need to have a little bit of an older guy that they feel like is more ready to play right away. Maybe they think Ollie Gale is that guy, the big strong side defensive end from Garden City Community College up in Kansas. But it also makes me wonder, as you move forward and are already up around 20, who in this mix could potentially end up playing college ball elsewhere if the numbers start to get tight and they're still pulling in commitments here moving forward. Because I still, even as busy of a recruiting weekend as this weekend was, I still think the next few weeks hold a lot. And there are some guys too here locally that even if they don't make a move in June, that LSU would certainly take further down the stretch. The two guys, Jacoby and Guillory and Jaquelin Roy, are two guys that I think are going to be critical for this class. And so, yeah, as you continue to add more of those high school guys, I wonder if some of the high school guys are already on board, maybe end up elsewhere. Or what happens with these commitments that, again, it's been kind of a weird deal to see them not be public now as we near the 24-hour mark.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk a little bit about the fundraiser. You mentioned it early on. I know, and just a reminder to our listeners, you had a close kind of working relationship, even a friendship with the late Wade Sims, and you were part of the fundraiser yesterday. Can you kind of dive into what the fundraiser was about, what your role was with it, and how just enjoyable was it you taking part in that, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, so I was over there just kind of showing some support as a lot of folks were, and it just ended up being a really nice day to see a lot of people who Wade had obviously touched on his life, and a lot of people who have really made a point to embrace Miss Faye and Mr. Wayne. The Wade Forever 44 Foundation is one that Wayne and Faye launched to help raise money for the LSU Vet School and to help students be able to secure emotional support dogs, something that the family felt very passionately about. Wade, obviously, if he wasn't playing basketball, you were probably going to see him with his dog, Buddha. And so I just, a lot of passion for that cause, for the family, and a huge turnout yesterday over at Topgolf, the relatively new Topgolf facility that they opened up in Baton Rouge here within the last year. The second and third floor, just each day full of a handful or half a dozen different people. And then some of the inside space where a lot of food was located and all that. A lot of people, you saw people all the way from Wade's childhood and then going up through those U High teams, with not only obviously expect Skylar Mays to be there, but I saw Max Starwood and John Jones and Johnny Jones and high school coach Joe Spencer. Will Wade was obviously out there. A lot of the basketball team, and a lot of people. I actually was paired up with Reggie Barlow, former NFL receiver for the Bucks, Jaguars, and Raiders. He's been a college coach now for recent years, and he hadn't interacted with Wade, just had seen kind of some of what had happened, had some local connections with some friends here that are associated with the university and with the cause, and felt like it was something he wanted to come out and show his support, because he's been kind of touched with the way things are going on, and just kind of the community reaction and support for Wade and the family. And so really people from all over just out on a nice day to support a great cause.
Jared, let's wrap it up with this. Why don't you tell the folks what you got coming, maybe to your byline there for TigerDetails.com. I know it's a very busy recruiting time, so you're going to be jam-packed right now in the month of June. But what you got coming to your byline the folks can go check out?
Yeah, I think a lot here these next couple of weeks, we're going to continue to monitor what's going on with these last few spots now after this recruiting class, and particularly heading into that final LSU camp the week of June 20th, because if there was this much activity this weekend, it'll be interesting to see what happens there, and just kind of trying to continue to add some of the perspective of where this class is right now, still competing for maybe the best in the country for the first time in a while, and looking into how it's all coming together and who some of those last few spots might be.
Jared, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Keep up the great work, and we'll be talking to you soon, man. Enjoy your week.
Yes, sir, Ray. All is well.
It's Jared Rozier. Oh, he's one of the best when it comes to recruiting. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, we'll wrap up our number two right here on 103.7 The Game.
Petrangelo flips the puck out. Krejci is on it now for the Bruins. Krejci slides it on his right for a shot. Score! Carson Colvin! His first career postseason goal gives the Bruins a 3-0 lead.
Boy, what a shot!
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also check us on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We've been doing our best to avoid talking hockey. I'm just going to fess up. We've had other stuff to talk about. But the Stanley Cup Finals are entertaining. Hockey, NHL playoffs are immensely entertaining. And here we are, the Boston Bruins just stomped the St. Louis Blues last night, 5-1, to force a decided Game 7 on Wednesday night. Winner take all gets to host Lord Stanley's Cup. For the most part, this has been, with the exception of really two games, this has been a competitive series. Game 3 was 7-2 for the Bruins. And then Game 6 last night, 5-1 for the Bruins. The Blues, on the other hand, have won the close ones, 3-2 in Game 2, 2-1 in Game 5, and then 4-2 in Game 4. I'll say this. Am I the only one that's kind of rooting for the St. Louis Blues? Not because I care about the St. Louis Blues, because I do not. Not that I have any animosity towards the Boston Bruins, because I do not. I'm sure they're wonderful people in part of that organization, coaching staff, players, vendors, even though I did see a tremendous video on the Twitter last week of two Boston Bruins fans starting a melee in the stands, because Boston being Boston. But are you just tired of Boston and New England? Can we just have a breather? Can we just have a team not from the New England area win a championship? Can we just have that?
I need more Cleveland in my life. I need more Toronto in my life.
Is that too much to ask? Is that too much to ask?
The Raptors are trying to do you a favor.
They are trying to do me a favor, but it's not like they're playing the Celtics, though.
No.
You know?
But they're trying.
We had the Pats win. We had the Red Sox win last fall. We had the Patriots win again. Do we really need to have a third Boston team win another world championship? Because they are the absolute worst fans in the world. They just are. They belly ached for years, and then when they started winning, they do not handle winning graciously. They just don't. They just don't. It's just awful. Just awful. So, yes, Stanley Cup Finals is going to a seventh game. That'll be Wednesday night. I do want to, in all seriousness, talk about a Boston Red Sox legend, though. David Ortiz, reports now have it that he is in stable condition after he was shot during a robbery attempt back in his native Dominican Republic. We don't know a lot about it. We do have some reports that David Ortiz's father said it happened during a robbery. He was shot in the back of his legs. Reports are that he is in stable condition and that they expect him to be able to recover. But a scary situation for a guy who's more than likely going to be headed to Cooperstown,
yeah.
A great postseason legend that helped bring Boston Red Sox those championships, and to have him being shot when he went back home to the Dominican Republic is scary stuff for sure. So we'll keep the Big Poppy in our thoughts and prayers moving forward. Second hour in the books. Third hour, going to go back to LSU baseball as we welcome on our friend Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us on the simulcast on KXKW channel 12.32.1. Sorry, on the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We started off today talking about LSU baseball, super regional defeat against the Florida State Seminoles. It just seemed that's how it was going to end, right? Saturday, Henry apparently has some type of arm soreness issue. He has to be pulled after throwing 41 pitches, only lasting two innings. They build up a lead, but then they squander it. They drop that game. And then Sunday, they lose a heartbreaker in extra innings. But there were some issues there with base running as well. So LSU season comes to an end. We asked you on the Twitter poll question of the day, the season in its entirety, are you not disappointed at all, slightly disappointed, or massively disappointed? We'll update that here shortly, but you can go vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Right now it's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is part of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Ag Radio, which you can hear live right here every week on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, Ray. How about yourself?
Doing well. The season has come to an end for the LSU baseball team. This weekend, there were a lot of miscues, a lot of mistakes, Jeff. The starting pitching wasn't great. The bullpen had its moments. Base running, brain freezes. All in all, what are your takeaways of what occurred this weekend at Alex Box Stadium for the LSU baseball team?
Well, it's the fourth time since 2012 LSU has seen its season end on their home field. And I would say, unlike the other three times where I just thought Stony Brook, Coastal Carolina, and Houston in that regional, they just outplayed LSU. I really felt LSU, they beat themselves. The 10 walks on Saturday, the bad base running, as you mentioned. Saul Garza not touching second base when you go from first to third. Giovanni DiGiacomo getting picked off last night when he was at third base. Zach Watson in the postseason was thrown out on the base pass three times. I mean, when does it finally click in? You know what? There's a part of about being aggressive, but maybe you carry it too much. And I know it was a bang-bang play there on Zach Watson. It probably could have gone either way, but still it was a risky play. I don't know if the better team is advancing. And I'm not taking anything away from Florida State. I just think LSU really hurt themselves. They had been playing well so long, and you knew it wasn't going to last. You knew Saul Garza wasn't going to keep getting two hits in every game like he's been getting. You knew there was going to be a drop-off, but, man, did they just – They allowed Florida State. They gave them a chance. They certainly gave them a chance to do it. And credit goes to the Seminoles. They took advantage of all the opportunities that the Tigers gave them. Pass ball last night too. The pass ball was big. Saul Garza unable to catch a fastball that's off the plate, allows the go ahead run to get to second, and Florida State takes advantage of it.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Ag Radio here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, Saturday started off fairly well. Then Cole Henry gets pulled after the second inning. The second inning he wasn't great, but he got out of the jam, but he did throw 41 pitches. He has to be replaced. I'll get to the fact that the Tigers were still able to build up a lead even with his early departure until blowing that lead late. But let's focus in on Cole. How much of a domino effect did that have for the whole weekend with him, I guess, dealing with inflammation or arm soreness, not being able to have a long outing in game one?
Well, I think it could have been a worse problem if Devin Fontenot wasn't so good last night. I mean, Devin Fontenot, his outing, which might be one of the best relief appearances in LSU history, to be honest with you, to throw six innings of no-hit baseball and strike out 11, and unfortunately gets tagged with the loss. But if Fontenot only went one or two innings last night, then I think it really would have hampered him. But because he was so good and ate up so many innings and was able to pitch into the 12th, I think it negated what happened on Friday night. There's no doubt, though, that LSU had to extend itself on Saturday with Cole Henry going down with the injury. And you have to wonder, Ray, if LSU does get past Florida State, what's the chances of them sticking around at the College World Series for any length of time if Cole Henry is unavailable to pitch? I just don't – this was a team that probably wasn't going to go very far in Omaha if Cole Henry's not there. So I think that would have been the bigger impact than, say, what might have happened, than the impact of this weekend. I think it added to what was a frustrating loss to begin with on Saturday. To have a 4-0 lead, blow it, walk 10 hitters, again, make some mistakes out on the field, base running mistake, allow Florida State to win that game. I mean, the whole Cole Henry situation of him having to leave the game, I think that was that just added to the frustration. And again, I don't think they really would have if LSU wins this series. I don't give him much of a chance to go very far in Omaha without him.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, let's talk about the rest of Saturday's game, because even with Henry having to be shelved after two innings, Todd Peterson, despite his showing off his agility on fielding a ball, performed very well, and they had a 4-0 lead. What happened there late against that Florida State team? I mean, it's just it. You have a lead late in the game, and they just let it get away from them. Was it just a couple of bad pitches? What occurred from your perspective?
Well, I think you do give a lot of credit to Florida State. They just came in and they really grinded out at bats. I mean, and they certainly did that in game one. I mean, Devin Fontenot was so terrific last night that Florida State wasn't able to work as many long counts as they were the game before. I mean, Todd Peterson, I mean, he threw 80 pitches in 4 1/3 innings. That's, or nearly 80 pitches. It was 79 pitches. I mean, that's a lot of pitches to throw in 4 1/3 innings for a guy out of the bullpen. And that's because Florida State worked a lot of 3-2 counts, obviously worked a lot of walks. I mean, I think the walks just came back to bite them. And that the fact that LSU couldn't put up a crooked number early on in the game, I think just allowed Florida State to have belief that they can win this game, that they kept it close. And once Florida State got that run on the board in the sixth to make it 4-1, I think they really felt like they had a chance. And then Trent Vitmeyer has this epic battle with Reese Albert, who eventually on the 11th pitch clobbers a home run that went way deep over the right field wall, and then the game certainly turned at that point, and then LSU was just not able to recover. Zach Hess gives up another home run. I thought in the game, because Florida State had so many left-handed hitters, that it just would have been good if LSU could have thrown a left-handed pitcher at him. I mean, out of the six pitchers that they threw, they're all right-handers, and Florida State looked just, as the game went along, they just looked awfully comfortable in the batter's box because LSU couldn't show them anything differently. And that was one of the flaws of this roster, was the fact that you didn't have a left-handed pitcher. And then last night, Antonio Velez, a left-handed pitcher who came into the Super Regional Series with an ERA near 4, baffles LSU's left-handed dominating lineup. And those were two big themes throughout the course of the season, and they both showed up big in a Super Regional Series. We all knew about LSU's troubles at times against left-handed pitchers because of their left-handed hitting lineup. I would say the fact that LSU didn't have a left-handed pitcher all season never really cropped up until game one of that Super Regional Series. Again, it was negated a bit last night because Devin Fontenot was so good. He was getting righties, lefties out, and he was so fantastic. But, man, they really could have used the left-hander in game one of the Super Regional Series. Might have been the difference, just to show Florida State something different, just to get them off balance a little bit. Instead, you keep throwing right-hander after them, and they keep fouling off pitches. They keep working long at bats. They draw 10 walks. They eventually wore down LSU, and they took advantage of the opportunities that the Tigers gave them.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo here of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, we had a couple of callers earlier asked about Sunday late. Why do you pitch to Florida State's best hitter there that ended up deciding the game? And some people think, hey, why not just walk them, put them on base? It's not going to matter because the winning runs is going to be at second. So why does it matter? Why pitch against them? Why pitch to him rather?
When it, yeah, well, when it was occurring, when Drew Mendoza came up to the plate, Ray, I instantly said, well, you got to walk Mendoza here. But Paul Mainieri's explanation in the post game is it makes sense. The guy behind him, Robbie Martin, actually hits for a higher average than Drew Mendoza. Mendoza is more of a strikeout candidate than Robbie Martin, who can, you know, contact hitter. You know, Fontenot's got 11 strikeouts already. They wanted to throw a fastball up. They did. They just didn't get it up high enough, and Mendoza was able to serve it out in the outfield. So I don't think it was a egregious mistake. I think it's something you can debate. That's the beauty of baseball.
Right.
You could sit there and say, why face Drew Mendoza when you could have put him on? But Robbie Martin, again, has a higher average. I would say this, though. Mendoza's the veteran. Mendoza's the leader of their offense. He's been there. He played in the College World Series in 2017. Robbie Martin is a freshman player. He might be a little bit more over-anxious than Drew Mendoza, who still stayed in the moment even though there were two strikes and two outs on him. So, again, I can see where Paul Mainieri is coming from. I'll go with my initial gut feeling. Walk Drew Mendoza. Put a guy on, put him at first. Take your chances with a freshman hitter and see what happens. But you could sit here and say that it cost him the game. I think the Salo Garza pass ball was just, it's just, and I know the kid's been catching back there for 12 innings. It's hot. But he was dropping balls all game. I mean, there were certain game there were pitches he was dropping during the entire game, and you can't allow that runner from first to go to second, and give Florida State, who's got this unbelievable belief about themselves that they can do this for their head coach, don't give them the opportunity, because that's what Florida State's been doing all series long or all weekend long, was taking advantage of every opportunity LSU gave them. Garza gave them a big one right there, and they win it in 12 innings on the single by Mendoza.
Jeff, we'll get you out with this. We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio here on the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. With everything that's occurred this season, with the preseason expectations, but then with the plague of arm soreness up and down, but then they had the great run at the end of the season. I know it ends in disappointing fashion. From your perspective as a guy who covers this team year in, year out, is this season a disappointment, a slight disappointment, or a massive disappointment?
I think it's a slight disappointment. I think a lot of it is because of the preseason expectations. You're ranked number one in the country going into the season. If you're ranked number one, the expectation is that you get to Omaha. Obviously, a lot transpired during the season. You had four pitchers on this roster that never pitched at all this season. Your three freshman pitchers all go down with injuries. You have a lot of lack of performance in for certain guys. The roster is fundamentally flawed because of the lack of left-handed pitchers and not enough right-handed hitting. When this offense was performing well, you were getting right-handed hitting out of Zach Watson and Salu Garza. In the Super Regionals, you really didn't get that, and you saw what happened. The team lost two in a row. But I think any time you get into the Super Regionals and you're one of 16 teams, you're giving yourself a chance. You're giving yourself a chance. It's funny, Ray. We just had a college basketball coach here at LSU take LSU to a Sweet 16 for the first time in a decade, and everybody calls him the greatest thing ever. Paul Mainieri has taken his team to the Super Regionals 8 out of 12 years, and there are so many people that are waiting for him to be fired or retire or whatever. It's interesting how the dynamic is. I think this LSU baseball program does need to do some soul-searching. They got to figure out why these pitchers are getting injured as much as they are. I think they got to take a look at some of their recruiting. I think there are certain players on this roster that really don't belong on this roster. and you got to do a better job recruiting. But we're also talking about a program that just brought in the number one recruiting class. Unfortunately, a lot of those guys were unproductive for most of the season. Drew Bianco, C.J. Willis, Giovanni DiGiacomo had his moments, but and then your freshman pitchers were all hurt, so you never really saw the benefit of that freshman class. There's still time, though. These guys got a couple more years that they can put it together, and I think next year's team is probably going to be a top 10 team preseason wise, because you're bringing back a lot of pitching. As long as these guys stay healthy, and they got to figure out how to make sure. Yeah, you're going to have some arm injuries during the season, but I mean, they had seven. When you think about it now, seven. You could throw even Zach Hess in this. I mean, they had eight pitchers that were all dealing with injuries. I mean, I don't know how you get through a season and have a great season when you got so many injuries like that on your pitching staff.
What about the training staff, Jeff? Is that part of the soul searching? Does something have to be done with maybe training and rehabilitation with the team or with the pitching staff in particular? Or is, you know, maybe a reevaluation of how Coach Dunn, who's highly respected and in a lot of circles beloved, is there some soul searching that has to go along there with all the arm soreness that occurred this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think there has to be adjustments made to their throwing program. They're going to have to look at it. Now, in some cases here, LSU may be getting pitchers that are damaged goods. I mean, you know, the A.J. Lavises of the world, the Drew Storrs of the world, that we're still waiting for them to make an impact to this program. I mean, those guys came in injured. Cole Henry was injured in the fall. Landon Marceau just never able to get healthy. How they were never really able to tap into Zach Hess. I mean, Zach Hess was supposed to look like what the kid from Florida State, C.J. Van Eyck. That's what Zach Hess was supposed to look like. That's what they were hoping to get out of him during his career at LSU. And Van Eyck showed it off last night, Florida State starting pitcher. But they never were really able to tap into any consistency with that. So they got to figure that out. This is 2 years in a row now that the pitching staff hasn't been all that great. Finishes the year with an ERA that's in the lower half of the SEC. That needs to change, or else LSU will continue to get bounced out before they go to Omaha.
Jeff, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Terrific stuff. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I guess some time off. I know you still got your Tiger Rag radio responsibilities, but are you going to squeeze in some beach time, my friend?
Well, I'm heading out on vacation next week sometime, but there's still a lot to follow here with this program. It'll be interesting to see if there is any kind of a shakeup after failing to make it to the College World Series for two straight years.
Jeff, appreciate your time as always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
That's Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but we'll be back right after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service and to promote public safety. Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Coming up here on RP3 and Company, we'll be having our good friend Teddy Allen. Works for Louisiana Tech, works for DesignatedWriters.com and the Shreveport Times. He's also the MC of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. He's going to join us to recap the weekend that was in Natchitoches right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. I was privileged this past weekend to be taking part of the festivities of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame weekend. Was up there for the presser on Thursday. We broadcast our show live from Natchitoches on Friday morning. Got to meet a lot of the Hall of Famers, interview them, and then took part in the ceremony watching it there live in Natchitoches. But no one had a better weekend than our next guest. You can read his work on the Shreveport Times and at designatedwriters.com. He also works for Louisiana Tech in radio broadcasting. But what he's probably the best at, and that is a big statement, is being the master of ceremonies for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Did a terrific job once again. Proud to welcome back to the program my buddy, Teddy Allen. Teddy, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good. I'm good, Ryan. Thanks. I'm probably not good at being the master of anything, maybe the MC, but it was a record crowd the other night, and it was a wonderful crowd and great class, and glad we got to be a part of it.
Well, let's start off. Let's talk about the induction ceremony, because there, you know, everyone had a really good time and delivered great answers to Lynn Rollins' questions. But let's start off there. Who kind of stood out to you? I know your good buddy Matt Dunnigan. You guys are friends, so I know he had a hell of a time up on stage keeping Lynn on his toes. and so did Les Miles. But who kind of stood out to you? Who were some of your some of your favorite moments from Saturday's induction ceremony?
Well, to let people know, in case they don't, we introduce them with about a 3-minute video, and then Lynn officially welcomes into the Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer Lynn Rollins from Pineville, Alexandria, and then he talks to him for 5 or 6 minute little Q&A. So Lynn's the hardest working dude that night, really. It's constant for him. But I thought, T-Berry, our 92-year-old cowboy and the oldest member of the Hall of Fame now, who was just a bona fide stud, and hearing him about taking his horse to Madison Square Garden in 1949, and of course there's no way to work him out, so he's just riding the horse up and down Broadway. That's interesting. Charles Smith almost started crying. Robert Cater, I enjoyed him. He's a real personable guy. And then getting him and Miss Louisiana Holly Conway to lead the group and take me out to the ball game, kind of a 7th-inning stretch, and our crowd of 800 got on their feet and sang. That was a lot of fun. Of course, Peyton was great. Les Miles, I think you agree with me, Raymond. Anything having to do with Les Miles, you feel like you're in a Carol Burnett skit. It's just so, he could just be so bizarre. He laughed the whole night. It was funny. Looking at him laugh, looking at Archie Manning who came back, looking at him laugh. Max Fugler, who also almost started crying. Remember, no one played more minutes on the 58th National Championship LSU team than he did. And he was just so sincere of his, speaking about his teammates and saying, we weren't really a team. We were just a bunch of friends, took care of each other. When those older guys get up there and start, really remembering and it all comes back, their youth and their friends, it's really touching moments. And maybe the most studly of the group was Danielle Scott, who's a 5-time Olympian and has had been involved in a horrific domestic violence deal this last fall, and how she has been so resilient and such a wonderful example for her daughter. And so, and of course, it's always good to see you and the fellas. I mean, I'm there mainly to see you and the guys. But it was a wonderful event, a record crowd, and if you've never been, I really think you'd enjoy being a part of it. There's plenty of events to enjoy Thursday, Friday, and Saturday next year.
We're talking with Teddy Allen of designatedwriters.com. You can also read his work in the Shreveport Times. Teddy, some things that have stood out to me. This was my fourth induction ceremony that I've been able to watch in person, and it just gets bigger and better every year. Let's talk a little bit about that. We've introduced the video montage, the introductions now, like a lot of the national and the world Hall of Fames do. You're the master of ceremonies. Lynn Rollins does the Q&A, but even though with it being so structured, hey, we got to have this clip. It's on television. Lynn has his time of how many questions he can answer. He's got to wrap it up a certain time. There still seems to be a lot of impromptu moments. Let's start off with the 7-inning stretch that you decide to bring in Hollis Conway's daughter, Miss Louisiana, and get Roger Kadar, the iconic Southern baseball coach who was enshrined. Was that something just off the cuff, or was that something that you planned?
No, I had asked him a couple days before Kadar. I said, would you be willing to maybe do that? He said, yeah. And so at that point, we were a little ahead of time schedule-wise. So while somebody was answering questions, I think it was Charles Smith before Kadar, I ran out and asked Holly if she, you know, it gives her a chance to get back on stage. She's Miss Louisiana, and, you know, she's the daughter of Hollis Conway, two-time silver medalist, Olympian, and wife Charlotte. And so she said, yeah, and then I figured that would make Kadar feel more at home. He wouldn't just have to sing by himself. And he's such a big personality. And it was about the seventh inning in the program. So it's time, you know, 800 people are sitting out there. Let's let them get up and stretch and hear 800 people sing. And so I thought they were wonderful. And Holly and Kadar were very charismatic up there. And so that was an unplanned, semi-plan. I mean, you have a little plan going in, but you don't know if you're going to be able to use it or not. The first time we did that was a couple of years ago with Juan Pierre when he went in and his little boy came up on stage with him. And it takes about a minute and a half.
I remember
something
that.
I think. Yeah. Something I think everybody remembers. If you've got a charismatic personality like Juan or like Coach Kadar, then you'd hate to waste them, you know. So the Hall of Famers are very pliable usually, and they're all very, even though big stars. I mean, you know, you think about Peyton or Les Miles, but they're very humbled and you know, by and large, grateful to be there. It's the best night in the state for sports in our state, I think, annually, and that's saying something when you're talking about Louis, when you're talking about our Hall of Fame. And you know, the hand clap by Les Miles, he showed everybody how to do that without hurting your fingers. And
let's talk about that, Teddy. Let's talk about that. That was I found that he was one of my favorites, and he always is, and I just love him to death. And
he's fun.
And he kept Lynn on his show. There was a time, the only time during the night that Lynn Rollins set his notes down for questions. It was about 2 minutes into the Les Miles interview, and he's like, well, these are going to be worthless. I'm just going to go ahead and put this down and let him just take, you know, steal the show. And he kept poking Philip Fulmer from stage and kept doing that.
Yeah.
And the clapping thing was great. That was definitely one of the highlights of the night for me.
Yeah, and I told Lynn, I said, you might want to just think about it. You know, we were talking about the night before. Maybe if you got time, get him to do the hand clap, because people would just like it, I think. Now, he got a little long, but you know, what are you going to do? It's Les Miles, and it was the end of the night. He was next to last inductee. People were laughing. And, yeah, it was very unrehearsed that Peyton's table happened to be right in front of where he was giving his interview. And so he really didn't mean to, but he kept talking about Tennessee, and, well, there's Peyton. I'm sorry to get on you, but, you know, Manning loved it, and that's another thing. All these people, they seldom get to spend time together, but maybe a lot of them have never met each other, but the interaction with the class through the whole weekend is another thing that makes it a special weekend.
We're on with Teddy Allen at designatedwriters.com. You can also read his work in the Shreveport Times, and he's also been our master of ceremonies for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Teddy, Charles Smith got quite emotional. He was probably the most emotional of anyone up there throughout the entire night, and he seemed to have the biggest fans. the loudest noise came from the Peabody Warhorse contingent there for Charles Smith. Look, I know Charles a little bit. I covered him for years. Hold him with a high regard. I was even surprised how emotional he got when he was talking about his parents up there on stage. That's usually one when the questions get asked about the mom and dad and they start reflecting on the lessons that their mamas and daddies gave them. That's what usually gets them broken up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, Bing, I'll tell your listeners, RP3, to go to it. You know, Google the Hall of Fame and read some of these stories about these guys. We had stories on all 11 inductees, including Philip Timothy and Dave Nitz as our Distinguished Service Award winners, and Marie Gagnardis, our Dave Dixon Award winner. But Charles Smith, he sold 10 or 11 tables of tickets were bought by Charles Smith fans. And usually these high school coaches, when they go into the Hall of Fame, you know, they probably got 30, 35 years, maybe 40 of coaching under their belt. That's a long this lineage. So people, you know, guys who are 45 years old would come back to see their coach get inducted. And so they're emotional then in that they're seeing all these kids from their past. And then when he got the call that he was going into the Hall of Fame on a Sunday afternoon in August, he was actually with his mom and dad. His mom has since passed away. But that was a wonderful moment for them. So he kind of teared up remembering that. And then his dad's a 96-year-old World War II veteran. So everybody gave him a big hand. And Charles just raised to do the right thing. And, you know, he's a calculus teacher, too. He says, I'm a teacher first at Peabody and then a coach. And apparently he's wonderful at both of them. But he's a genuine deal. And that's the thing about the Hall of Fame night, what makes it so special. You're going to have these unrehearsed moments of these, you know, superstar competitors humbled down to these little moments of, you know, tears because they're grateful and they know what a special moment this is. They've worked so hard and they've been recognized for it. And that's our job, is to make sure, even though there's so many wonderful competitors in our state, I mean, it's just, we're so deep in the stars and we're almost spoiled by it and you forget how athletically rich we are, but they know that they really crossed a serious line if they get to the Hall of Fame in Louisiana, and we want to make sure to recognize them and share those moments with as many people as we can on Cox TV or at the Special Events Center in Natchitoches.
We're talking with Teddy Allen, designatedwriters.com. He's also, you can read his work in the Shreveport Times. Teddy, you've been involved with this as a voter on the Hall of Fame committee. You've also been a champion of the Hall. For the folks that maybe have never gone, or better yet, for maybe people that have never gone but can't come up for induction weekend, hey, that museum's open 365 days of the year. Tell the folks why it's such a great place and definitely a bucket list item for sports fans in the state to go check out.
Sure. For one thing, it's on Front Street in Natchitoches, and walking any store in Natchitoches, or Front Street in Natchitoches, and you're going to feel you're in a special little piece of America. I love the town. And then the Hall of Fame on the corner of downtown is upstairs is the state history, and then downstairs is a sports history. And you've got, you know, film clips, and you can go over there and punch in Matt Dunnigan's name, and you can read a short bio on Matt Dunning. It's just real clean, it's friendly, and again, you're going to see stuff in there that we never had a place for. Frazier Coliseum held some stuff for us, and we're glad that Northwestern State did that, but now it's this, you know, cool place on the corner of downtown that's open to groups and families, and just call the Hall of Fame, they'll hook you up with, you know, a guided tour, then you can enjoy the rest of Natchitoches. We're just lucky that we have a place that's got, you know, Pete Maravich tennis shoes and scrapbooks and you know, Kim Mulkey game jersey and Carl Mailman Malone jazz gear. You can see all of that at the Hall of Fame. Again, it's a athletically rich state, so you won't be disappointed, and you won't be disappointed to go hang around in Natchitoches.
Teddy, I appreciate you making the time for us, as always. By the way, congratulations once again, brother, on being named the Sports Writer of the Year for your work last year for designatedwriters.com and the Shreveport Times. Well-deserved honor, my friend. Couldn't happen to a better guy.
No, you're the man, RP3. I enjoyed seeing you this weekend, and thank you very much. And on behalf of Peyton Manning, remember Peyton's in the Hall of Fame. go see him. And the other stuff, too. All their this class of stuff is displayed, and you'll really enjoy it. Thanks for the time, man.
Not a problem, Teddy. Teddy Allen, designatedwriters.com.
How could you not tell me my wish came true? All I wanted was Peyton Manning to sing the nationwide jingle, and he did, and you didn't tell me. My new best friend's Teddy Allen. I don't like you no more. He's my friend now.
Well, thank Teddy for coming on. Well, we got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up on this Monday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us every morning from 6 to 9 on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD, high definition. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests that came on to help us start off the week on the right foot. Of course, Teddy Allen, who just joined us in the last segment from designatedriders.com and the Master of Ceremonies for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Thanks to Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Ag Radio and the Louisiana Radio Network, breaking down LSU baseball's loss to Florida State and where does the team go from here for next season. Jarrett Rozier giving us the latest and greatest updates concerning LSU football recruiting. Lots of movement here in the month of June. Does a terrific job. And then also a big thanks to the Hall of Famer himself, the former national champion, the Mad Hatter, Les Miles. Also want to take a moment to thank our friends that called. Head coach Danny Broussard led things off today. Doug gave us a call. And then, of course, Tim called during a commercial break. So thanks to everyone. Cody, we asked the people in the first hour, LSU baseball poll question. Let the folks know what, in fact, the question is, what their answers are, and give us an update on the polls, my friend.
This is an interesting one. I like this poll. This is probably the one I'm most intrigued about checking in tomorrow for the final results. So I'm glad we got it in early on the show today. So early in the show tomorrow, it'll be closed. We asked you, what are your initial feelings on the LSU baseball season as a whole? Because your feelings will probably change maybe in 2 weeks. Maybe, you know, you look back on certain things and things change. But your initial feelings when that Band-Aid was ripped off and the season was over, were you not disappointed at all? Were you slightly disappointed? Or were you very disappointed? And this is interesting, RP3. 26% say not disappointed at all.
Bravo.
27% say very disappointed. And then 47% that leaves slightly disappointed.
How many votes we got on this?
So far, 38 total, pushing 40.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Still got 21 hours left.
So LSU fans, despite losing a heartbreaker last night and being swept in the Baton Rouge Super Regional by Florida State, seem to be pretty even-keeled, seem to have a level head about this season and everything that's going on.
I mean, it's a tie for either, you know, good season or, I hate this team. Those two things are tied. And then in the lead there is this guy going like, well, that sucked. So that's kind of how
they
got it.
But still, we got to the Super Regionals.
Right? That's basically, exactly. The leading take seems to be, well, that sucked, but I guess we got that far. While it's a tie for I don't care.
And it's an improvement from last season to this season.
And I think this has more to do, too, with people looking at it like I was looking at it. Yes, some things in this season are a disappointment, but when you take how disappointing that first part of the season was, how the season ended is less disappointing.
That makes sense.
Sort of.
I understood that.
Let's end the show.
I followed that logic.
Very good.
But I do agree with what our good buddy Jeff Palermo said. I expect there'll be some soul searching, there'll be some changes. We know the lineup's going to be overhauled with all the guys either graduating or going to the draft. But Jeff Palermo said it. There's some guys on that roster that don't belong on that roster. And there could be some changes done with the training staff and possibly how they approach pitching as well. So I'd expect some major tweaks in the offseason heading into fall camp for the LSU baseball team. Terrific show. Great way to start off the week. Y'all make sure to tune in tomorrow, 6 to 9, we'll be back on right here on 103.7 The Game.